So we've been hearing a lot about sexual harassment in the entertainment industry, but your research shows that it's also pervasive in science. So how does it typically play out in the sciences?
There are a lot of similarities across workplaces. The main thing to keep in mind is that there are actually some measurable ways. There are people who've been doing this research for the last several decades who've been able to identify sort of the main factors in workplaces that seem to increase the incidence of sexual harassment. And so these similarities you see across media and Hollywood and the sciences. And the main ones are organizational tolerance for harassment, meaning, you know, that they that there's basically a permissiveness around the ability to commit these kinds of things. And the other one is male domination. So either that there are more men than women in that type of workplace, or that men tend to be more in control of things, like they tend to hold more leadership positions. And again, with both Hollywood and science, both of those things often hold.
Yeah, and you'll be discussing all of this on this Thursday, February 15th, as part of a webinar with the American Chemical Society. And what do you hope to convey to that audience?
I have really three goals. It's just to explain what sexual harassment is, to take on some of the myths that people hold about what it actually looks like and what is considered, you know, what are really considered hostile workplace behaviors, to spend a little time on, you know, the stuff I started with around organizational antecedents. So explaining that there are measurable things in workplaces that we know make it more likely. But then also the third point is that since we know what those are, we actually know how to fix them. And so sort of talking through at least some of my ideas and some of the ideas from the literature about how to create a better climate.
You mentioned myths. Can I ask, like, what's an example of some myths or misconceptions people have about sexual harassment in the sciences?
One of the big ones, and again, this isn't just in the sciences, this is everywhere, is that sexual harassment is sexual. You know, that the most common types are the Harvey Weinstein type things, like unwanted sexual advances or sexual coercion. But really what's a lot more common are sort of non-sexual sexual harassment or gender harassment. So these are crude behaviors, offensive comments, put downs, hostility towards people of a certain sex. So those kinds of hostile behaviors are actually much more common, much more pervasive, and because they're more frequent, are often equally damaging to what we'd see of as these less frequent, but you know, we often think of as more severe acts that are more sexual.
In the announcement for the webinar, it mentions that you have upcoming work in engineering, so I wanted to ask you a little bit about that. What can you tell me about that?
I'm working with Gilda Barabino, who is an amazing collaborator. She's dean at CUNY City College. Dr. Barabino is an amazing colleague, and she's a preeminent biomedical engineer, and someone that we've just exchanged a lot of conversation. You know, we've had a lot of conversations around both racial harassment and sexual harassment, and the intersections between the two for women of color. So that's one upcoming project. I also am on an NSF-funded project with people on campus. So Kelly Cross, Jenny Amos, Princess Mwekeda, and Ruby Mendenhall are all collaborators of mine. I'm a minor player in this. Kelly Cross is really the lead of this project, and that's on the experiences of undergraduate women of color in engineering here.
That's specific to the University of Illinois campus.
Mm-hmm. Or at least that's where we're gathering our data, but I imagine that a lot of what we find is going to be, you know, translatable to a lot of engineering schools.
What role do you feel that individuals and universities have in addressing this problem moving forward?
I think the big thing is that universities have to stop relying on compliance and trying to follow the letter of the law when it comes to Title IX. There's nothing more maddening to me as a sexual harassment researcher than taking sexual harassment training organized by for-profit companies with weird cartoons that are just telling us don't sexually harass. When really there's extensive evidence at this point by researchers who show that type of training doesn't actually work. I really think universities have to look at their values. They have to look at their mission statement, and they have to ask themselves, am I treating victims in a way that is in line with the values of my university? Am I, you know, are we as an institution proud of how we're treating victims. And unfortunately, I don't know that there are very many universities that could honestly answer yes to that. So we really need to move towards a more values-driven approach to handling sexual harassment reports. But we also need to extend it, since only 5% of sexual harassment is even ever reported. We have to actually look at broader climate issues and think about, well, what's that 95% that's never going to come to light? What can we do to build respect climates to try to reduce that incidence?
You mentioned sexual harassment training and how research shows this might not be the most effective way to combat sexual harassment. What do we know in the research about what is effective?
Sure. You know, there's a whole center that studies this at the University of New Hampshire, and they have made some really amazing strides in helping us understand training. You know, like I said, those trainings that are, about building knowledge and that are online and that are about, like, here are the behaviors you shouldn't do, now go don't do them or else. Those definitely don't work. Those build resentment. They even can build retaliation or backlash and potentially more sexual harassment. So they're a terrible idea. But what UNH researchers have found is that if you create training that is face-to-face, that's a minimum of 4 hours, that involves, if I remember correctly, I think it needs to involve some scenarios or role-playing, that helps people think about, well, what are actually the positive behaviors we're trying to encourage, not the negative behaviors we're trying to stop. And so there's also a researcher at UConn, Vicky Magley, who also does a lot of work on respect climates that has shown a lot of the same stuff.
Thanks for sharing all that. Is there anything else that you would want to share or discuss?
I think the only other thing is, you know, I'm so pleased that there are so many people who care about this right now. In the sciences, this has been a hot issue for the last 4 or 5 years with, you know, every couple of weeks, we're wondering who's the latest scientist who's about to get a BuzzFeed or a Nature article about them. And it's really exciting to me to see people wanting to do something about it. And what I would really encourage anybody who wants to make change in this to do is to reach out to subject matter experts. A bad survey or bad training is not going to solve it. So you have to actually work with the many, many social scientists who've been doing this work for decades in order to, you know, fix things in your unit or your school or your university.
Kate Clancy is an associate professor in anthropology at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. She'll be speaking more about this issue on Thursday, February 15th, as part of a free webinar provided by the American Chemical Society. You can find a link to that and more information at our website, willnews.org. Kate, thanks so much for taking the time to speak with me.
No problem. Thank you, Christine.